part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
Well, thank you for coming on to the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. It's really great to have you on. I mean, you are, well, for everyone who needs to know, my name is Christian Horn, and this is the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. And your first name is Joseph, but what is your, is it just you, or why you, or what is your full name? Because I don't even think I know.
Yeah, I mean, you can call me Joseph. That's how I go by in English. My Chinese name, I guess, it's Chou Shen, but it's very hard to pronounce. So, yeah, skip that part. And, and the last name is YU.
Gotcha, gotcha.
That's why you can call me Joseph Yu, Joseph Yu.
Oh, great. That's terrific. Well, the reason that I have you on, I mean, we should, whenever somebody has a Kickstarter, I kind of like to just jump to, you know, what they're here for, because, I mean, that's why you're here. You have a Kickstarter. Yes. And, well, you've actually already funded. What's really funny is that you contacted me a while ago, and we'd been going sort of back and forth during the holidays, because the holidays is kind of crazy, and there's, you know, there's a time difference, because for anyone who's listening, you're actually in Shanghai, correct?
Shanghai. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and so
your evening's my morning.
What's that?
So your evening's my morning and vice versa.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, it's 8 p.m., close to 8 p.m. now, so it must be close to noon your time, correct?
That's correct.
Great. Well, I appreciate you taking the time out of the middle of your day to join me. Yeah, so you have a Kickstarter, and I'm actually looking, or I was looking at the page. It is called Split. It's called the Split Earth Odyssey, or...
Split Earth Saga.
Split Earth Saga. There you go. Okay, I just found it, and I opened it up again. And you would send me an email kind of out of the blue, you know, saying, oh, you know, if you'd be interested and stuff like that, and, which I always love to get from creators. And, you know, sometimes it can be a little hard for me to sort of schedule things because the show is called Part-Time Fanboy. But I took one look at the Kickstarter, and I was blown away by how professional everything looked and the artwork and just sort of the concept idea. So for anybody who wants to support an awesome Kickstarter, the project is called, you go to kickstarter.com, and it's called Split Earth Saga. Actually, I found it a couple of days ago just by typing in Split Earth, so I guess you're the only thing that starts with the words split and earth. So that's a good thing for you. Thank you for contacting me. Thank you for reaching out, and thank you for notifying me of your,
thank you for accepting
your Kickstarter. Of course, it's absolutely my pleasure. I actually wish I had been able to do it before. As of right now, it looks like you've already funded. You're over your goal. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you. It was a hard fight though, but we made it, I guess.
Oh, really? Because, I mean, the product looks great.
Yeah, just because the season thing, like Christmas was really slow, and then we had the New Year's Eve. We were warned, actually, like there were a lot of veterans telling us not to do it like during Christmas season, but we just did not want to drag it over the way till 2018. So we launched it anyway, and yeah, it was a lesson hard learned, I guess. And yeah, so if we do it next time, we're definitely not going to do it Christmas.
Yeah, that's sort of the advice I've heard from a lot of friends or people that I've talked to on Kickstarter, sort of like avoid the big holidays or ending around the big holidays if you can. But so the Christmas thing, the holiday thing still plays for you, plays out for you, even though you're halfway around the world?
Yeah, that's, I guess, primary reason is because Kickstarter has about 70% U.S. backers.
Oh, okay.
Like most of the backers from the U.S. and or from Europe. So that's a big thing. And yeah, so it does matter, I guess. Like we have this 1 week of vacuum period where like we get one or two pledges every day.
Mm-hmm.
We did our best. Like we tried to reach out in Facebook, spreading like promotional materials and stuff. But just the effect was like really, really low.
Oh, wow. Gotcha. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So for people who do not know or who have not been to the Kickstarter page, what is Split Earth Saga? I mean, it's a graphic novel that you're sort of self-publishing, correct?
It is, yeah.
And it looks like, I don't know, I mean, it's the presentation stuff on your Kickstarter is beautiful. I mean, it looks like it's fully painted. Is it all digital? Is it traditional media? Like, I mean, you're the writer, correct?
I am, yeah. And I'm one of the three co-creators for the project. Yeah, so I guess the short answer is we're trying to build a book. It's a futuristic fantasy graphic novel. Mm-hmm. So the main reward of the Kickstarter, like if you support us, the main thing that you get is a book. It will be 120 pages and fully colored. We painstakingly spent a lot of effort trying to make sure like the story panels look great. It's sort of like a sci-fi plus fantasy story. About a future when Earth splits apart, literally, in two hemispheres. And one hemisphere stops rotating altogether, the one that was facing the sun, and the other one rotates in this eerie manner. If I could show a graph, it would be easier. But
sure.
Because of that, there are all sorts of different geographical zones formed in all parts of Earth. And so the primary characters of the story would be a team of female warriors. So in our setting, only females, trained female operatives, are able to use this weapon called Darkstone to fight this very weird enemy, spectral enemy that spawned out of nowhere. And males are their sidekicks. So each warrior is accompanied by a male blast supplier whose blood must be compatible with her weapon. So in the story, you'll see like four different warriors of very different personalities and skills, and each accompanied by a male psychic in a way. And together they form teams and they go into dangerous missions and across hemispheres. That's the short of it, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so in this fantasy world, at least according to the Kickstarter video that I was watching, the primary fighters are female and they carry weapons that have to be powered by male blood, correct? Yeah, and they fight creatures called, what are the creatures called?
They're called Alabaster, and they're sort of a spectral, like specter, sort of like ghost, you know, half ghost kind of enemies. And so like normal weapons won't be able to hurt them. You cannot use guns or missiles to harm them. Only Darkstone, like a special mineral that pop up after Earth split it. And so they sort of forge some Darkstone weapons and to let female operatives use it.
That's great. It's fantastic. So it's a really original concept. I mean, so what, so you're the writer, and did you work with two artists and to come up with this, or are you a co-writer, or who came up with the initial idea for this?
So I work with these two artists, Zypher and Monica. And Zypher and I were like old colleagues, and so the idea of this Earth split apart, that was my idea, and I brought it to them. They liked it, and we thought, hey, why don't we just try to do something about it? And then we started developing world and character and stuff. And so Zypher was essentially the one that came up with the idea that, you know, like these Darkstone weapons could be powered by male blood, because like, I guess in the Chinese culture, we have this notion of yin and yang. Like you might have heard about it, like the Tai Chi concept of sort of like light and darkness in a way. And
sure.
The balance between yin and yang, so male and female, light and darkness, time and space, that kind of thing. So we thought it would be really cool that if we have turned this thing around and have female operatives fight the enemies and the males would play a supportive role to begin with. But of course, like, once you enter into a story, you will see like the guys would be doing different things as well, not just supporting, but yeah.
Sure. And sort of in your culture, is it because, you know, in the U.S. right now, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but there is sort of a a rising movement among women sort of to become more empowered and strengthened and, you know, challenge male traditional roles and stuff like that, which is something that's been going on for years and years and years, but it's come to the forefront because of our new president and sort of the way that he has talked about and behaved with women. In your culture, is it sort of the same for it to be a strange thing for the women to be in the forefront or the lead characters as well? Or is it more acceptable in your culture to see sort of female protagonists in movies or in TV or comics or whatever?
Well, I think this, I guess this empowerment thing is definitely global. Mm-hmm. Like you can feel it anywhere. And even in mainstream media, like the superhero movies that we all watch, right? Like China is a real big market for all the American movies. And that's kind of how everyone believing right now. And that definitely that has an influence on us. And that's how, kind of how we came up with the idea as well, part of it. And then we just blend in our own notion, our own philosophy of yin and yang into it. But I guess in China, greater China, if you include Taiwan, Hong Kong into it, I would say Chinese is a very ancient culture. Like it's like 5,000 history culture where people are they more or less the same. But in modern age, we are majorly influenced by the Western culture. So back to your question, like whether it's more accepting or it would come out more as a surprise, I would say there wouldn't be that much a difference because. Like kids growing up or watching like superheroes and Marvel, DC movies. So this is kind of the short answer. I don't know if that answered the question. But, yeah.
No. I mean, it makes sense. So basically the sort of bigger movies and possibly media that you were exposed to might have been very male centric. And so that influences your culture as well, correct? As opposed to female centric, correct?
Yes and no. I mean, I was trying to say that like we watch all these movies and so we kind of go with the flow of where like the world is going right now. So this whole female empowerment movement right now, it does it came to China as well. And so in even like the local domestic entertainment stuff, like the comics, the Chinese comics and TV shows and stuff, you'll see more and more women getting posed and playing equal roles and stuff. But again, like I said, because Chinese is such an ancient culture, there are areas where you likely wouldn't see women coming up. Like, for example, in if you have like war stories and stuff, it would be tough seeing like, women holding guns and stuff. But yeah.
Sure. I totally understand that. So what perpetuated you to sort of I'm sorry, you had said it was your artist who might have thought of having it be an all female squad. Is that something that was that idea something that when he came up with it, were you all like, oh yeah, that's a great idea? Was there any resistance to it? Was there a reasoning behind it?
No, there was no resistance. We totally embraced it right up front. Like, one of the reasons is because Zypher designed really beautiful female characters. Mm-hmm. And we worked together, I knew about it, and that was his strength. And so, if we were doing the graphic novel after all, and when we put spotlights on, like, the female form and how they use weapons and all these things, it's just simply beautiful. And Monica, when she saw it, she embraced it right away. So that's kind of the reason for the visual. But philosophically, he talked about the notion of this balance between yin and yang, like this duality. So part of the reason that we created the monster Alabaster, the way we designed it was that they look really distorted. And they're kind of like the manifestation of human emotions gone wrong. Mm-hmm. The whole reason that Alabaster existed was because they're in a state of imbalance, and so Zypher came up with this idea that the only way to fight them is that you have to have warriors in a very balanced state. So we had to pick like either female warriors using male blood or the other way around. And it just seems so much cooler having female warriors fighting, you know, ghosts and stuff. And it also clicked with where the world was going right now with all the female empowerment thing, right?
So, sure. And I'm sorry, you said there are two artists. You had said Zypher and someone else?
Monica, yes. We had a girl in the team.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. Okay, so and what does each of them do? I mean, is one of them drawing it or doing layouts, or and the other one coloring, or how does the balance between them work? I mean, why do you need sort of two artists on the team if that's not a stupid question?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. We are a very small team, and if you see our production value, like the artworks and the story that we put up, it's actually like heavy duty work.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And it's all done by the three of us, like, you know, no one else. So breaking it down, Zypher is like the core designer. So I came up with the storyline, the world setting, etc., and he would, you know, like, sort of grab elements and come up with like really, really like super visually stunning images, not just the characters, but also like technologies. We had this thing called Sun Sail. It's like a ship that's powered by solar power, and it looks amazing. It's like the main poster thumbnail of the Kickstarter campaign. So Zypher does most of the design. He also fleshed things out, like characters and stuff. And essentially when we do the comic, like he would be the one that that color things and put them in finished form.
Uh-huh.
And so the role that Monica plays, like she is well-rounded, and she's like very multi-talented. She's a good artist. Like she does a lot of the illustration works. Uh-huh. So some of our signature posters are painted by Monica. And when we do the story panels, like when we do pencil sketches and stuff, like the three of us would discuss things together, and she plays a major part in steering where the story goes. And like she kind of, you know, she could get into the role of different female characters and tell us, you know, like, okay, well, women wouldn't speak like that and stuff. And she's also kind of like the glue of the team, because like I said, like she's multi-talented and she speaks different languages and visual languages, and she also knows how to tell stories. And so like if there's a conflict between I guess me as a storyteller and the designer in Zypher, then she would, you know, like kind of smooth things out.
Gotcha. Yeah. So how did you three meet? How did you meet them? I guess going into your background, did you all three kind of work together? I mean, you're a writer, correct? I mean, did you,
yes.
do you work professionally as a writer in Shanghai or?
Yeah, I'm a professional creator. I work on different projects like local games and now the comic. And also I'm a published author, and I write both fiction and nonfiction. And the way that we met was I worked in this company where Zypher was in. So I knew he drew really beautiful female characters, and he was so philosophical in design that he totally knew what he was doing. And so that's how I approached him. And then he brought in Monica. I think they worked together before. So yeah, that was kind of short of it. Yeah, I guess.
Oh, that's great. So I guess, how did you get into comic books? I mean, I'm assuming I've not had the good fortune to necessarily travel a lot to other countries. I mean, I've been to Europe and South America, but never to sort of that area of the world. And so I'm assuming that the comics market or the comics and some of the movies and obviously media. I mean, I do like foreign films and stuff like that, but, and I do love manga and, you know, at least what I've been exposed to. You know, there was a short period in the US where there was a giant manga explosion, and I was reading a lot, and obviously manga is Japan, but what is the comics market where you live? Like, how old are you?
Oh, I'm old. Like, I'm past my 30, close to my 40s.
Well, I'm older. I'm a little older than you, so we're both old. But I mean, what comics did you sort of? I'm assuming because you're making a comic, you really enjoy comics. So, are comics something that you were raised on?
Okay, so you asked two questions. One's about the market, and second's why we chose to do a comic, right?
Yeah,
and
sure.
I'll answer the first one about the market. And I guess in Asia, mainland China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, all these areas, we read standard stuff like Japanese manga and Western comics. But I guess in terms of the market, there's definitely disproportionately, like there's much bigger market for manga, simply because, you know, aesthetics, like the way that people embrace like the visuals, and it's like people, everyone reads Japanese manga here, One Piece, Naruto, all those.
Oh, really? And, that's great.
Yeah, definitely. Well, they used to read like pirated version, but now people are paying to read them and buying books and stuff, and that's a good sign. Superhero comics, like Western comics, it was never a big thing in China. Mm-hmm. There was a niche, I myself included, like I read them, but it's totally not as big as manga. And so that's kind of the way that the market is set right now. But with all these Hollywood movies coming in, Iron Man, Captain America, all these, and people started getting interested in comics. And I know some of my friends, they read like, you know, Marvel comics because of the movies, they want to find out more about, you know, what's behind and stuff. And so that's kind of short of it. Manga is a big thing, 70% at least of the market where people read manga, and you know, superhero is still a bit of a niche. And the way we started, because I'm a writer for different media, like I published novels. I started out as a novelist, but now I'm also writing for comic, and I wrote for local games. And there was actually a game that we published that was performing really well in the U.S. Mm-hmm. It's called Storm of Darkness. It's like a first-person shooter game that made up to like the Google Play action game, like number one rank in the States for like a week or something.
And oh, wow.
It was a long time ago, like 3 years ago. And Zypher was in the company too. Like he designed some of the characters. It was a stupid game. Like, it was just very simple, like shooting games, but somehow people liked it. And
it can't be that stupid because it got to number one, right?
No, like you just stand there and you point and shoot. That's it. Like, you cannot even move. But yeah, uh-huh. But I guess the visuals are really stunning. I mean, feel free to download and and judge. But yeah, so I guess because I write for different media, I also write like sort of preconception, like sort of like the concept treatments for films and stuff, and all done locally. And so like when we had to choose what to do with Split Earth, like what kind of media to put out, like we discussed it for a bit. And of course, like Zypher is an artist. And so in the end, like comics make sense in the way that if I put it out in simply as a novel, then I wouldn't be needing the artists. But if we go into like, say, games or films, that we would need a whole team for those. Mm-hmm. And so like comic allows us to stay like in the core, like we want to make sure the foundations lay down like really solidly, like all the character design, world setting, technologies and the stuff and storylines and stuff, like we want to make sure they are really solid, and that can only be done if the team is small to begin with.
True.
And so we decided just to give a try with comic because it makes sense that way. Like if you want to build a team, we need at least 20 people to do it. But back to the question, like we were not very experienced in doing comics. Like Zypher draws comics in his current company. Like they do like web comics and stuff, and he does like line works, ink works for those comics. But still, like we were relatively inexperienced. But I guess because the artworks are so beautiful and we've all been exposed to different media's creation, so it worked out pretty well. And we just tried to put them into panels and figure out, hey, this might work. And we found a batch of, I guess, friends and comic lovers and show it to them, and most of them, you know, liked it and saw it has potential and gave us constructive feedback, and we started from there.
Yeah, I mean, the thing of it is it's interesting that how you say, you're kind of saying, oh, you know, comics might be slightly easier to put together than, say, you know, a movie or something like that. Yeah. But this totally. Comic is, I mean, beautifully rendered. I mean, if the rest of the book looks like what you've got on Kickstarter, I mean, that looks like a massive effort, because usually you see a lot of indie comics here in the US, and some of them are really impressive. But you look at this, and this looks like, I mean, the closest thing I have to compare it to is something, say, European, I mean, looking. I mean, as far as like the artwork goes, the painted artwork. And so I guess, I'm just curious as to how long it's taken you to sort of put this together. I mean, visually, how long does it take your artists to put pages together? Because, I mean, this looks like a lot of effort. I mean, I look at it and I'm like, wow. I mean, I'm very impressed.
Yeah, totally. You got it right in terms of, you know, this looking a little bit European in terms of style and stuff. Like, Zephyr and Monica, their techniques are a blend of different styles, and definitely they include like European oil painting and Oriental brushworks owing to their approach. So yeah, that's how you like this is things that you see, very visually stunning. And when we started, like we had our day job, like right now, even right now, we are working our day jobs.
Wow.
So we had to do it like sort of in our off work time. And that's why it took so long. Like I wrote in the Kickstarter that it took us like about a year and a half to lay down the foundation alone. Mm-hmm. Getting all the world setting right, the plot core and character design, all that. And we had to use like weekends and evenings to do it. So it did take a lot of time. And like the first year, it took the longest because we tried to figure out like what kind of story, what kind of the visual element to present that would be penetrating. Like when people see it, like immediately you would get it. That's what you see right now. Like, okay, Earth splits bar in two, and you have female words and all that. Like, these are really simple, easy to understand concept ideas, but it took us actually quite a bit of time to figure it out.
Sure.
So we tested things and stuff. And I think it's always, we try to take it slow. And like, it's the same thing as when you do a movie, like in the script period, like when you're writing script, it could take up to, you know, a decade even, right? Like to
sure.
produce a really good story. So once those core parts are figured out, it became easier. And all the amazing artworks you saw on Kickstarter, like those are, like those took a lot of time, but to the artist, it's actually relatively easier. Like, it's just work. Like you painted it, and they're so professional that they got those done like in no time. And the most, like I said, the most time-consuming part would be the ideation part, where you sit down and discuss things and try to figure out, you know, like you become sort of philosophical in a way and discuss where the story is going. That took a lot of time and a lot of debate. And once those are settled, and it's laboring work. And even for the comic process, it's the same. Like I would come up with a script, and the part that would take up the most time would be when we decide like what to come, like what the panels will look like. And because mm-hmm. I mean, you have three different brains and, you know, different angles to present, different characters saying different things, and you know, the page layout and stuff. So it's more about like the story narrative, the story flow that took us most time. But once you settle that, then it's easy. Like once those frames are decided, the artists get to work. They could produce like one page in maybe 2 or 3 days. And
really?
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, that is beautiful stuff. I'm very impressed. Is this like you're saying working part time? It takes them 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive. That's impressive.
Sometimes they work in the office like without their boss knowing.
Don't say that; they'll get in trouble. Do you know what the artist works in? Is he using Photoshop primarily, or?
Yep, Photoshop.
Sure. And generally speaking, like when you were sort of writing this out, it seems like you all three collaborated very sort of closely on this as far as like the story goes. But do you, when you're writing this graphic novel or you're writing, say, a comic, what method are you using? Are you just like writing, you know, because here, and I don't know if you know, like there's like the Marvel method, and then there's like,
yeah,
it's considered like the DC method, where it's like there's a pan, you know, the writing is like panel one, and you know, there's a ship and it's floating, and then this character, and you know, the Marvel method is more like there's a ship floating out of the sky and people are jumping around, and the, you know, this character runs over here, you know, it's more general. How do you sort of like lay things out for your artists when you're working? Or is it, you know, like, do you just present them an idea and then you all three like sit and design panels? Or is it that you wrote the full story out and then you present it to them and they break it down? Like, how does that work between the three of you?
Yeah, so we know how the Marvel method works, and we also know how the manga method works.
Oh, okay.
So we have all these different things that we study for. And we kind of follow those ways and tried it out.
What's the manga method? I don't know that I've heard something address that. Well, how does that work?
So I'll get to that in a bit. But first of all, we try the Marvel method where I pen it down, write down, okay, panel one, and this is what you see, and this is what you do and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And eventually you found that it wouldn't work. And we kind of found why. That's because Marvel is such a solid industry. It's such a mature industry that people in the industry will understand the language. So that saves a lot of communication trouble. Like, you know the layout, you know the concise language that you use. You see text and you immediately form those into images. But we are so new. Like, we're so new and amateur. We have a lot of potential, but we didn't really know like how things work. So when we try to communicate through text, it simply wouldn't work. Like, we would have a hard time finding the right vocabulary of how to present visually, how to present things visually. But when we find the right word, we found that we meant different things. Mm-hmm. So, so it was like, we just found like, hey, I wrote down the panels and sent them to them. And when it came out with the visuals, it just looked so different. And they had a hard time too, because they tried to grasp what I meant, by these simple texts and stuff. So we would, and then we would sit down, we discuss about things, and we found that, if you have to discuss every panel, it would also be very difficult and time consuming, especially when we have our day jobs. And so then that's when we turn to the manga method. And we know there are actually manga about the manga method. I'm not sure what it's called in English, but I'm pretty sure you can find it in the market, about this artist for the Japanese industry. And the way they do it is that the storyteller, so usually you have either you have one artist that does everything and with a lot of assistance,
yeah,
or you would have a team. And the team would usually be consisted of only two or three people. The storyteller would actually be required to have the skill of penning down panels. It can be really crude. Like, you can be like, super ugly and you can draw this matchstick man and stuff, but you have to be able to tell the story flow in visual form, perspectives and angles and all these things. And of course, when the artist got these sketches, and he would turn those into like these beautiful panels, and that's what we do. So eventually we try different methods. So I would draw in very crude form what I try to present, and I would also put down like dialogues and stuff. I present it to them, and we go over it together. And the final panel would look very differently again from what I drew, because I mean that's so professional, and they would see visual elements that I could never see as a storyteller. And my job is to make sure that like the narrative flow are set right in the framework and control the emotion of the audience, and not control, it's the wrong word, but sort of like you steal the emotion of the audience, and there's an emotional curve and there's this page limitation that we got to figure out the frame and stuff. And their work is just to turn all these things into visually stunning panels. And they we see things so differently, and it's a very interesting collaboration process, I guess. Yeah.
Sure. And but for yourself, when you were creating this, did you have to write it out for yourself in like long form? Were you writing pages for yourself, and then you go to them and present them your scribbles and stuff like that?
I have a outline that I wrote. I try not to turn this into a novel. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Sure.
You'd be reading it anyway. So, but I guess that the lucky thing is that because I work with a gaming company, and also I actually did work with a local comic production company before, so I knew like what different creators for different media are looking for, and mm-hmm. More or less I know kind of the kind of languages that would make them see it. So I tried to put it in as short a form as possible, but mm-hmm. sometimes that's interesting thing I found out. Like, even if I write it in a long form, they wouldn't be reading it, or they would be reading it, but they would skip text and not really getting the essence, and vice versa. It's the same way that when I look at paintings, I would miss a lot of details because I'm just not built that way. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's so essential that we sit down and communicate about things, and because we offer different trade and different value to the project. And I handle the beginning of the concept and stuff, and once I pass it to them, they are like magnifier, where like when you see the pictures on Kickstarter, it's totally their work. And when I came up with the idea. I never thought it would be like that. They did it like so much better than what I could ever done. And so it's an amazing process. And the interesting thing is that you would think we all speak English or Mandarin for that matter, but we actually don't. Like The language of the storyteller and the story art, like the language of artists is so different. And even between artists, like between Monica and Zypher, between the design artists and the commercial artists and the illustration artists, it's so different. Like we had to sit down and discuss everything. But it's a very fun process. Like to us, it's a learning process. Like when we sit down, we constantly learn things from each other. And it's really cool. Like you work we just feel very blessed. Like every time we discuss about things, we could learn new things. So a lot of times, like most times, Zypher would turn my ideas into the visual and Monica would polish it. Or Zypher would go all the way to coloring, but Monica would pick out bits and pieces and give him constructive feedbacks and all that. And storytelling is the same. We speak very different languages and we try to, kind of understand through the process what each other mean. And it's a very fun learning process, I guess. Yeah.
Sure, sure. And did you guys ever have arguments as to like where you wanted it to go? Was there ever any sort of like headbutting?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Oh, really?
It's part of the fun process too. Like we didn't get to the point where we raised fists, but it's part of the learning process of trying to understand what each other see how each other see things. Like the artists would see the world in images, space, and like they see things in images and also space and coloring and composition. And it's like the emotional part is almost instant. Like you see one image and in that second you feel the emotion or not, right? Like if the image doesn't convey a certain emotion, then it doesn't. You won't be looking at the image for 10 hours and suddenly find out, wow, this, I feel this new emotion welling up, and it doesn't make sense that way. But for a storyteller though, like we see the world in time. Like emotion is never bursts in fixed points. It's more like a curve that rises and falls, and that's where we write stories, that you lead one thing leading to another and it's always continuous and your emotion either goes up or down. Mm-hmm. So it's very different, and that's primarily where the communication needs to happen. And we have sort of developed this healthy way of communicating back and forth, but the key process is still when we sit down together and talk. I think that's a very key, and we try to do this once every week. So once I present the text and the script and like the panel description stuff, and even with assistance of my own sketches, and we sit down and go over things, and they would tell me, okay, these parts are like they would primarily be more focused on how each image convey in the instance. And that's kind of what I would neglect, because I would be seeing the overall picture of the whole story arc. That's why we call it the arc, right?
It's sure. Continuous.
And they would pick out like, points where they could enhance. And it's a cool process. Like we just learn so much from each other. Just, yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great. But speaking of language, obviously you're in Shanghai, a different language than English is spoken in your part of the world. But I noticed that this graphic novel is obviously going to be in English. That's the only reason I can understand. Was there ever any plans to do it, or have you already done it in Mandarin as well, or...?
When we created them, definitely we had to write in Mandarin. So we have all these things in our pocket, like it's just when we launched in China. But we decided to go for Kickstarter first, and we just thought that partially it's because the artist's visual style, it's more, like you said, European, American, more like Westernized. And,
sure.
And so we thought the Western audience would sort of readily embrace them. And the second reason is we just thought it would be cool, like trying out English like right off the bat. But we have all the Mandarin parts in already. We haven't launched it yet in China, but we haven't ready. As for other languages, not yet, but we're open to like if there are people approaching us, we are open to the idea. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. It's great. It's interesting. The one question I wanted to ask, because obviously we mentioned that main fighting unit is our female protagonist. But the right. thing that I did notice, and obviously is noticeable, obviously these are all very beautiful female warriors, and they're kind of skimpily dressed, you know. Yeah, I know that that's fine, and I understand, you know, what sells comics. I'm not against it, but was there any concern about sort of the balance between sort of over-sexualizing the female characters and, you know, sort of making them strong, you know, because there's definitely a segment of readership, and probably female readership would be like, well, yeah, this is great that they're strong and they're the main fighters, but you've also got them dressed like sort of bikini models as well. So were there any concerns on your guys' end as to how to sort of address that at all? Or
yeah, there definitely was. And the concern primarily came from me, because I guess that leads back to your previous question about the sort of like the cultural difference between China and I guess America. Yeah, I guess the sensitivity of the female role in China is slightly lesser. It's more like a follower in a way. The sort of like the Chinese culture is at this point. So I have more. I'm more sensitive to these issues, and I raise it up to them about these. But we also know, like, I also knew, like, right off the bat, like, right when we started this project, it was because I knew that Zyfer would paint really beautiful females, mm-hmm. and it makes no sense for him to draw otherwise.
Sure.
And so that's kind of the, and we, of course, like, when we started, it was fun. It was a fun process when we came up with all these characters, but when we started trying to commercialize it, there were decisions that needed to be made.
Sure.
And so one dimension, like one element of consideration is that the world setting itself, like one of the hemisphere, like part of the Earth it's called Everlight. So it's like constantly under sunlight. And because of the setting, I'll try to skip the tedious part, but when these female, when all these warriors, they cross the hemispheres, they would be under the strange mystical effect of the blue light that came from the center of the Earth that would disintegrate all inorganic stuff like airplanes and guns and cars and all weapons and stuff. So that's how these scientists, they design these this algae. I don't know if I even pronounce this right, but it's algae liquid. This sort of is it algae? Is how you say it?
Algae.
Algae.
Yeah.
So algae liquid, where you put these warriors in the capsule and fill with these liquid. Once they land in Everlight under the sun, these liquid would dry up and become suits, forming along tattoo lines. So they actually have tattoo lines along their body, and that's why you see these suits. They look partial, and they have different styles, and those don't just apply to females, but males too. If you look closely at the picture, like all these male characters, they also dress scantily, but much the same way that you see the water ballet where. It's just the way, like, aesthetics is for humans, I guess. Like, if it's simply more beautiful when females dress, like, you know, when you do the design, we try different things. We have males wearing shorts and stuff, and they look really wrong and kind of weird.
Well, maybe and, to you, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, actually, no. To Monica too.
Really?
She was actually the one that we had this debate. I had this clash with Monica, and she was actually taking side of what I just said, and I was the one that was kind of say, hey, you know, like the guys should dress less, but she just felt, you know, it was really ugly and too plain, very plainly, and yeah. So we had all these debates but of course, like before we launched it commercially, we had to, you know, decide where we stand. But for all the above reasons that we mentioned, and primarily, so we decided to go with the degree that you see on Kickstarter. So there would be, you would see female warriors dressed scantily, but also you would see them wrapped in like cloaks and clothes and stuff. But it also depends on where the characters are in the story. Like if they are under the, like in Everlight, like under constant glaring of the sun, then it's one form. And but if you look at the thumbnail of the Kickstarter, you see this female protagonist, Sprite, she's called, and she was sitting, she was perching on this rock and with a big ship like in the background.
Yeah.
And that picture was in the city, so of course you would dress differently in the city. Yeah. So we tried to differentiate that way, and but back to your question, yeah, we had to decide, you know, what our positioning was, and in the end, I thought, you know, because Zephyr and Monica, they're so good in painting female form, so we thought we would take that risk. And unfortunately, I guess right now, at least at this point, like we, from our backer feedback, and it's mostly positive. And
sure.
We do have a proportion of female backers, and they bought like deluxe books and stuff, and they gave us pretty good feedback on, you know, they would appreciate this kind of art and stuff. So we're pretty happy about it at this point.
That's great. That's great. I think that, yeah, I mean, obviously I have nothing against it. I mean, everything looks beautifully drawn, but it's definitely sort of an issue that might come up for some people where it's like, hey, wait a minute, they all look like bikini models, which, you know, again, I'm fine with, I have no problems with that, you know, but
algae suits.
what, algae suits?
Yeah,
that's great. I think it looks, I mean, obviously it's just a gorgeous looking book all around. What sort of, because I mean, here in the US, it's very much sort of become the trend for people to make a comic first to sort of pitch for an idea for a TV show, a movie or whatever. What sort of opportunities would you have with this where you are now? I mean, do comics, first of all, I guess the one question is, you said you read a lot of manga, and there's, you know, also other imports from other areas in the world, but I'm assuming that there are Chinese comics as well, correct?
There are a lot,
Yeah, a lot, because I've seen some of them, but I don't know that I've been exposed to many. Do they get sort of turned into movies over there? Do they get turned into TV shows? Is that sort of a thing that happens in China as well?
It does happen. There are a few prominent cases where they were quite successful domestically. But I guess the industry is not as mature as Hollywood, for example. So definitely it's happening and it's on the rise, but in terms of the proportion is it's totally different from what I guess America is right now. And so that's part of the reason why we want to turn this into an English comic first. And first of all, because like we in comic we focus on the story narrative and also the visual images, like because if you want to create a franchise or IP, whatever you call it, like you have to set the image right, and we have the core members to do it. So we thought, you know, like laying the foundation solid would be the first step, and we're open to the idea of turning this into other media, like games for one, maybe like TV series, web series, and that's definitely for it, and that would require different expertise. But we are also open to the idea of collaboration. So yeah, and if you see the map on Splur, like somewhere in the Kickstarter page, we put out this map where, because the world looks so differently now, like there are areas where you never see sunlight, and there are areas where you never see nighttime, and there's this thin strip of habitable zone where cities remain as they are.
Sure.
And it's a huge world, and so there are definitely possibilities for different stories to happen there. And the graphic novel is only 120 pages after all, so we try to focus it to a very limited part of the geography. And so we're open to the idea of, you know, expanding this and maybe to different media, and maybe we'll do a different comic next time, like, you know, like a different comic setting a different part on Splurs and with a different team, and who knows, right?
Sure. I mean, not to spoil anything about the stories, but is it pretty much a contained story? Do you leave a room open for a sequel? Is it, I mean, you're obviously talking about a bigger world, but not to ruin anything, but is this like sort of, because I know that in foreign comics, and in particular manga, stuff like that, there's a beginning, middle, and an end. You know what I mean? Is that sort of how it works with this? Is there a beginning, middle, and end to this story, or is it sort of the first part in a much larger sort of saga that you're building?
Yeah, so when I wrote for this graphic novel, I wanted it to be a standalone piece.
Oh, okay.
So in other words, it has a complete story arc, a complete emotional arc. So when you read from beginning to end, you can kind of tell, first of all, you would be emotionally satisfied. Like there wouldn't be any like major cliffhanger, you know, like when you watch Game of Thrones, you know, end of season one, oh my God, like you gotta go see and stuff. And also it's a test on our part for our team. Like I think it's a major test, like whether a creative team can come out with a standalone story, have a fully rounded like story arc and stuff. So that's kind of what our aim was. That being said, though, however, we did like not to spoil anything, but we did lay down a few loose threads. Like there would be elements in there you could totally see like they being expanded out to a sequel or other like side stories. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I mean, it really looks like an incredibly fleshed out world that you've built here, just based on the stuff that I've seen on the Kickstarter. I mean, just the designs of some of the city, you know, paintings that they've done. I mean, the fact that you went to that much trouble is really impressive and shows that you have been working really hard on building something that, you know, that's going to be fully fleshed out once it sees, you know, the light of day.
Yep. Hopefully.
No, that's great. No, and I mean, just sort of to round it all off, what were some of your influences in sort of creating this? What did you look to when you were thinking of building this world and your comic?
A lot. Like I guess as audience in China, we consume creative contents that came in from everywhere in the world, not just the comics that were produced domestically, but also like manga from the Japan, superhero movies, and for me comics as well, like from the West, and even European comics too. Like Zyfer, he read a lot of European stuff. That's how he incorporated his oil painting style. And so there's not a single influence, but for different elements, for different aspects of this graphic novel, we actually look to different things. Like for example, story building. Like I'm a novelist myself, so I know how, you know, like beginning, middle, and end, how the plot structure goes. And when I try to make it a standalone story, I could think of successful examples like Brandon Sanderson's novels when he wrote like these single stories that were just amazing. And also I would turn into TV dramas, like, because nowadays I think TV dramas are creating the way that you have all these intricate human relations, and there's a lot of dynamics between the characters, and that's how the drama could go on and on, right? So when we designed it, like for example in the graphic novel, we have a team of four female warriors, each accompanied by a male psychic. And so you have eight characters, and when you go through the process of, you know, you would go through the adventures, inevitably some of the dynamics might change, you know, and not just relationship, but also someone could be hurt or even, you know, disappear or die. And when that happens, the whole dynamic would shift, and you have these eight people locked in this state of conflict and constantly changing their dynamics. And it's the way that TV series and TV dramas are done nowadays. HBO and all these and amazing series, and I watch a lot of these, and I definitely draw inspiration from them. And but in terms of visual style, like I said, like Monica and Zyfer, they take influence from different I guess they have works that they love. Like Zyfer, we refer a lot to European comics, and also some of the superhero comics that he liked, and Monica would bring different styles, different elements to make things more lively, I guess. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, I think this project looks amazing. It's definitely one of the more impressive ones I've seen on Kickstarter, and I really got to say, it looks like you guys have, you know, your act together. It looks like everything's I mean, you've already funded, so I mean, that's great news. Congratulations on that. Yeah, but you know,
stretch goals as possible.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, if you're out there listening to this, throw more money their way, because it does look like a beautiful project, and it is one of those things that, upon first glance, when you first see it, it's like, oh, yes, this looks like something I should put money behind, and I think it looks like a beautiful book. And you know, I mean, it's amazing to me, the miracle of technology, that you are in Shanghai and that I am in Los Angeles, and that we are talking to each other through the miracle of the internet. I really do appreciate you reaching out to me, because I mean, the first time I think I got your letter, I wasn't even able to really focus on what you were doing, and then I went back and looked, and I was like, yeah, I gotta talk to this guy, because this looks like a really amazing project, and I'm sorry it took me so long to get to you. But
no, we're grateful that you accepted this. I mean, it's so hard for creators. I mean, we have the internet, it's so global, like the world is flat, but at the same time, because this is explosion of media, right? Like people's attention are occupied, and it's so hard for creators for us to reach out. We try to spread our artworks and our stories on Facebook, and it did work to a degree, but it's just so like labor intensive, so hard. So at one point we figured that we should, you know, reach out to more prominent media, like podcasters, bloggers and stuff. And we sent out a bunch of emails, and you're one of the few that replied, and we're really thankful that you gave us this opportunity.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how prominent I am, but I'm glad that you reached out, and I really appreciate you taking the time. And I, you know, this project looks great. I'm going to throw some money behind it, and I think everyone out there should too. And I think it's just fantastic, like just that we're sort of in this world of, you know, international storytelling. That you know, you're making stuff that I am interested in, and you are, you know, obviously we're from two different cultures and different, you know, areas of the world, and it's just that we can both, that you can create something and that I can look at it and go like, oh my God, this looks amazing. And you know, that there's a universal language that's sort of being spoken. So I really do appreciate you taking the time to reach out to me, I can't wait to see the finished product, because it looks fantastic.
A side note though, like if you go into the update section of Kickstarter, like we update these backer map. So we put stars on cities where backers came from, superimposed on the map of spillers, right? And so you see like these backers from Israel, Colombia, Costa Rica, and all these. Like it's amazing. Like this, like they came from all over the world, Dubai, and we're blown away.
Oh, that's amazing.
US person.
That's so great. Well, congratulations on funding, and this project looks great. And again, thank you for getting in touch with me. You know, Joseph, do you have anything else to say about your project that you want to let people know about, or anything else that you're working on that you might want to drop in there before we sign off?
Not a lot. It's just that we're really grateful. This is our first time running a Kickstarter. And it's such a healthy, creative environment. Like we could totally feel it. Like we don't have this kind of thing in China. Like we have crowdfunding platforms in China, but I backed some of them, and it felt a little bit different. Like because Kickstarter has been around for so long, and the mechanism, the algorithm, the way they are set up is so creator friendly, and you can totally feel like we have a lot of like veterans and super backers from the platform coming to us and giving us. Know-hows and tips and you know how to do things and just it's so helpful and this first time Kickstarter campaign runner and coming from Asia, you know, with no experience whatsoever, it's been an amazing journey. And so I guess the last thing I would add is that this is not just a project done by, I mean it's created by the three of us, but it came this far commercially, not just because of us, and we have a thank you list for all the people that help us along the way, and we're really thankful to everyone who came on board.
Excellent. Well, I wish you the best of luck. I can't wait to see the finished product. I mean, it looks fantastic. And if you're out there and you haven't pledged to it yet, please do. Just look for Split Earth Saga on Kickstarter. You can do that by going to the search and typing in Split Earth Saga. And I have been on the line with Joseph Yu, who is the writer and co-creator of the book. Yep. And my name is Christian Horn, and this has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. And we have gone international for this episode because Joseph is in Shanghai, and I am very impressed with the technology that has allowed us to speak to one another on this day. Yeah. But thank you for listening to Part-Time Fanboy. Check us out on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. We're on Instagram. If you care to email us, it's ptf@parttimefanboy.com. And we will be back soon with another episode. But please fund Split Earth Saga. Just keep throwing them your money because it looks like a great project. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy.